gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Pod of No Return, an in-depth, sometimes humorous, behind-the-scenes tour of real life and a Broadway show with your hosts, Greg Mills and Jeremy Stoll. Well, hello and welcome back to the Pod of No Return, our two-part series. That's four parts cut in half, so it's only two now. That joke is terrible. You are welcome. I'm your host, Jeremy Stoll, and
I'm Greg Mills.
And we are going to dive right back into the Pod of No Return panel from Comic-Con. The first part was rather funny, right? We had a few things that happened, such as Greg giving Megan Picerno a little guff about her story, about not having to audition for the Phantom of the Opera. And I'm realizing at this moment that I said Comic-Con. How often does that happen to you, Greg? Because Comic-Con is such a brand. It's like calling any bathing suit a Speedo. You just accidentally call this my Speedo. But no, that's your bathing suit, right?
I never call my bathing suit a Speedo, Jeremy.
I don't either. I'm trying to make myself feel better because not only it's can like I not remember the name BroadwayCon, I can't spell. And I'm letting it all out here.
It's like calling every a soda you drink a Coke. That's what we do in Florida.
You see? There you go.
Coke, and you're like, oh, what do you want, Coke or do you want Pepsi? Or
well, at least you don't call it a pop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
That makes me go, what?
What?
Hi, 1950. What's happening? You want a pop?
You want an egg cream?
You want an egg cream in a pop?
you want a swizzle stick for that?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, Bill and Edna down the street are having us over for hot dogs and macaroni today.
Pat and Patty's backpack shack.
And tangent done.
Comic-Con.
Well, anyways, it is BroadwayCon. Yes. what other things happened in the first part of the episode?
Well, we all learned Megan didn't audition, which great.
Great, Megan. Thumbs up. Yeah.
Thumbs up. What else did we learn? We found out the fastest, like, people had to, like, jump in for understudy parts or go on for somebody else.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was some kooky stuff.
And the story, I didn't get to tell a story, actually. There's how many stories did we not tell, especially in the blooper section, right? Holy cow. There was one story I talked about. The story where they called me to the office and I thought that, oh my God, somebody's out of the show. And it turned out the office needed some help with IT. Basically, they needed to turn a doc into a PDF or vice versa. I'm not sure. But it had nothing to do with me going on stage. There was one time when it happened, they called me to go on and I went into the makeup and I started act two. And... And at the start of Act Two, if somebody else is in the show, they have to announce, ladies and gentlemen, for the remainder of the performance, the role of the Phantom of the Opera will be played by Jeremy Stoll. And then
that was a
I got to hear
impression of Beth Ward.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I got to hear the most glorious thing, which was, 1,686 people go,
and you hear the rustling of the paper, like,
yeah, exactly.
Going through the playbill, like, who?
Man.
What has this guy done?
I know, right?
Great. We got used to the first one. What else?
Oh, gosh.
What else did we learn from the first episode?
We have awesome fans.
Yeah, exactly. Greg and Jeremy forgot to introduce actually everybody on the stage until about halfway through the first part of the panel.
Well, we did like the NBA basketball, lineup, and you're starting swing for
That's
your
true.
2023 yeah. Phantom fans. Scott Makita. I mean, we did that and then they came out, but we didn't give them the proper tell us about yourself, you know, until
exactly.
later. We kind of realized when they were answering questions, we like looked at each other like, wait a second. We went off script for a bit. And then we kind of got back on. And
we got ourselves back. I felt like we were just comfortable. And there were so many familiar faces in the audience. I figured everybody knew who we were and what we're from and what everybody did. Right. I just made that assumption. Yeah. So the people who walked into the panel and maybe don't know who's who in the show, they didn't have a fighting chance until about 10 minutes in.
Right.
And then Leo, how about that? How about Raquel bringing Leo the dog on stage?
So cute.
Oh, that was amazing.
My dog would have peed everywhere. We would have had electrical fires. It was just. I have
what
to
have
say,
you
I, was
been
so,
up to?
I was so impressed with how like comfortable you were up there. I sort of found my little director chair and kind of stayed in there. And that made me happy. But like you got up and like you walked around, and when you like asked a question or whatever, you got up and, you know, you did some movement and walking, and I was like, oh, good for you. I should do that too. But I'm
there's
not.
There's some stories that need movement, right? You gotta reenact them for people, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, Joyce just said Leo pooped in the green room twice.
No, God.
You don't get that at Comic-Con.
That's right.
Who are we kidding?
Or maybe you do.
Yeah,
who
you
knows?
Do. I bet you do.
Yeah. Oh, man. What about...
I'm sure there's some Harley Quinns that have pooped at Comic-Con. I don't know.
Oh, God. Do you... are there any stories that didn't make it? Any blooper stories that didn't make it that you remember?
I mean, most of my career is a blooper, so...
Wah, wah, wah. Terrible.
Terrible. I mean, some of mine have been, like, accidents, so I won't count those as bloopers. Me falling through the stage as the Phantom is not so much a blooper as a, I'm alive.
Yay, so I made it.
Yay, I can still breathe. There was one... You know, I didn't want to take up too much time because we had so many great people on the panel. I wanted to make sure they got to answer questions. There was one I had that I loved that was from when I was on tour. And I think we were in Canada somewhere. I was playing Raoul. And we had a local dresser. When you're on tour, you pick up a lot of local dressers. You may have heard the story already.
Oh, I know the story.
She just loved the show. She was a big Phantom fan. And so she used to just kind of, whenever she wasn't changing clothes, she would watch the show. So we were doing Managers 2, and she was watching the show from the wings. She was very, you know, downstage left. But she was leaning up against the wall, and when she did, she leaned against they had a button for the fire curtain instead of like normally like old theaters, you had to cut a rope to bring in the fire curtain. But she was sitting there watching the show and she leaned against the fire curtain button. And so as we're doing Managers 2, the giant fire curtain that protects the audience from if there's a fire on stage comes in. And once it comes in, they can't stop it. And so it's this huge curtain that comes in and closes off the stage from the audience. And we're still doing Managers too, but our Pianji, who was John Whitney at the time, was extremely downstage. So he is the only thing that's visible to the audience as the rest of the show is cut off by this curtain. And it's just John Whitney standing there in front of the audience with this giant curtain behind him. And we're all still singing. And then we finally stop and he like stares at the audience and he kind of shimmies off stage right like a South Park character, just in complete like, you know, sideways walking, and we had to stop the show for like 10 minutes until they could get the fire curtain back up. But it was just
it took 10 minutes for it to get back up.
Yeah, basically. Oh, and then to get the God. You know, to sync back up and get the orchestra ready. And
was this before socials?
Yeah, I think it was before I think maybe I was on Facebook at the time.
This was the before time, before
the before time.
The iPhones had instant gratification and instant.
We played our music on a compact disc.
Yes. Oh, there it is.
We're back to that.
When things happen like this, such as in my neighborhood yesterday, a crane caught fire and fell.
Oh my God, that was crazy.
I knew instantly because of all the socials popping up on Instagram. It was bananas.
Yeah. two of our guys that used to work at the Majestic, that were front of house guys, they lived over that way across the street, and they were posting videos when that happened. I was like, holy crap.
Brutal.
It was brutal, unbelievable. Brutal. Yeah, yeah. What about you? What do you remember? Or what was your, do you have a blooper that you didn't get to share?
Oh, there are so many things. I mean, just anything Ken Kanter ever did, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Ken Kanter
was king of the bloopers.
Lefebvre, when he called Piangi Adobo Pasquale because he had been using Adobo seasoning up on his lunch for some reason. I think at one point, are the doors secure? Goom, goom. You know, that part, yeah. He said...
It's essential that all doors remain
secure. It is essential that all doors must be secure. And he said that... What did he say?
He just went up and he was like, it is essential that all boys are straight. And I was on for the marksman at the time. I think Paul was Ral or something. And I mean, and I nearly dropped the gun. We were all like... I did like the slow turn like... Tug Watson was on as the other soldier and walk off stage. He was in tears. Oh my gosh, Ken Kanter.
Oh my goodness. You know what we did? So our panel actually originally had Laird McIntosh and Julia Udine, and unfortunately both of them could not make it due to unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah.
And so we made a little video for them, and the audience was very, very sweet about it. Made like a selfie video saying, "Hey Laird, hey Julia," and then the audience waved at them, and it was really a sweet thing. It was fun, and I missed them, and I'm so sorry that they had other things happening, unfortunately. Yeah. But
hey, maybe we can post that video on Pot of No Return or something, just so people can
see. Oh, that would be fun, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's about to happen in the second half? Do you remember?
Well, I know we had more questions, and then from the recording, we kind of wrap up and thank everybody. And then I know we went and did the kind of fan photos, and we signed some posters for some folks. Yeah,
have some posters. I think we're going to do some giveaways, aren't we? We have people that everybody in the panel who signed it. Also, people who didn't make it are being sent the posters of the panel to sign.
Yeah, Laird and Julia. Those are
gonna
go,
yeah, those are going to go out to people who they belong to, and then we're gonna have some giveaways for some more of those.
I do remember. You know, I remember a question because I was going to ask it. It was so hard because basically by the time we got through introductions and everybody got on stage, you know, we had about 50 minutes to kind of really take some questions. And with, you know, we had Scott, we had Marie, we had Carl, we had Leo the dog, we had Raquel, Elizabeth, and Megan, and you and I. So that, you know, for everybody to answer questions, you know, it was almost 10 minutes of questions. So it was hard to get to everything, but I do remember one that I had pinned in case we had time that we didn't get to ask was someone asked, how do they determine which understudy goes on, you know, who goes on first or who goes on for that day? And I know you and I kind of looked at that question like, oh God. So I'll let you answer that because I'm sure you have thoughts on that.
What's funny is the thoughts is what did I say to you? I said right on stage, you said, should we do this question? And I said to you, well, when we figure out what the answer is, then maybe, because we still don't know. There is no rhyme or reason most of the time to who goes on and what happens, because we would think it was in fair. It was like a numbered thing, but there was the algorithm to how somebody goes on was so crazy because coverage had to be considered in many ways.
It was kind of like, instance, who's hot right now? Yeah.
He's really hot right now.
It wasn't about
Jeremy Stahl is so hot.
Who's
right now.
The best option? It wasn't about who's the favorited, or maybe it was. But in many times, it was more about like, well, Greg needs to go on. He hasn't been in a while, but well, Greg can't go on because there's only one other Andre, and that's him. So if Andre goes
seven
down,
people
we need
have
Greg.
COVID right now.
So. Yeah, exactly. and it just that chess move version of why people are in what parts, because basically the show has to go on and every character on stage has to have some sort of backup. Just in case anybody goes down, there has to be backup. Very, very, very rarely do we go on stage with one person who can do the job for the night, because we just can't do that. So if it is your, let's say your turn, or they said it's your time next to go on for a certain part, and then another part that you do doesn't have the coverage, then you get bumped and somebody else goes on. And there's, but then that happens in other ways, like which one, there's like a whole risk assessment to it too, right? Well, okay, so do we have Greg or do we have Ted Keegan? Because which one is more likely to go out? We don't know yet. Sometimes they would call and say, you're on hold, but we don't know until about 3 o'clock exactly what the cast is going to be. So maybe or maybe not, you're this. It was,
and I've had principals taken away from me. They're like, oh, it looks like you're going to be on for, you know, so-and-so, Andre, tonight. And then they're like, hey, we got to, this person and this person called out and we got to, you know, and so they've, normally they don't like to do that, but it has happened that happened. And I remember one time I was, and I'm sure it's happened to you. I know there was times you were the only Phantom or the only Ral like left. But there was a time, you know, fairly close to closing that I think it was when Paul had taken over and was doing Ral for a spell.
Several months.
It was before John was coming back to close it, and you had a personal day, and Bronson was away doing a concert. Bronson was filling in for, I guess, for Paul, while Paul had moved up. Bronson was doing that, and then Paul called out, and I was literally the only Ral in the building, so I had to do like 3 or 4 shows, whatever that weekend was. So that stuff happens where just there's nobody else.
It gets risky. I think London,
it does, yeah.
London had so many people sick and they didn't have coverage. They had to cancel the show. We never had to do that, which is fun.
It was crazy.
There was one point you mentioned. Oh, sorry.
It was just, it was amazing that we didn't cancel through all the COVID stuff.
There was one point. I was the last man standing. I was the last Phantom in the building.
Yeah.
And it was for many, many days. So I kept going on, and they always joked, like, we're going to bubble wrap you. I would go home and I'd stay away from people. And I came back, and finally people started coming back from COVID and from whatever was ailing them. And then they told me that had I not been able to come in on any of those shows, we would have closed the show. And they don't know if they would have opened it back up. They don't know if we would have come back or if that would have been it.
So you're welcome, everyone.
Yeah. But that was, I don't know how that logistically works in that way, but that, I'm glad they didn't give me that piece of information during that time, because it was stressful enough.
Because they were really worried about, you know, the cost of, you know, having to cancel a show for a night or two. It's significant. And, you know, they thought, you know, I guess especially if they had in their back of their heads that the show may be closing at some point anyway, that financially, if we were going to miss shows, that might doom us.
Might as well just do it, yeah.
I mean,
they're getting killed anyway in all these Broadway shows. It's a miracle they made it through all the money they had to spend on COVID with the masks and the testing. And they spent thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. It was crazy on all the protocol. And there was new jobs put into the show that were full salary just to maintain it. It was a miracle. But
side note, speaking of, you know, tough things happening to shows, just wanted to say a quick shout out to the company of New York, New York for, bummer about their news that they're closing, and that's a shame.
That is a bummer. I loved that show. It was really cool. It's just such a tribute to what it's like to be an artist in New York City.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, beautifully done. The sets were brilliant, and the dancing was brilliant. It was just, that was a treat to see, and my hat's off to that very, very talented cast, which I could not be in. I'm not talented enough. a week's notice to the show closing.
Yeah, they only got a week, that's pretty brutal.
That's brutal. That is brutal. I don't know how you prepare your life in a week. But you guys are very talented. High five. Anyway, let's dig ourselves back into the happy times and go back to BroadwayCon, my friend. BroadwayCon is fun. Afterwards, you know what you missed, Greg? You missed us messing around with the wax statue from Madame Tussauds.
I know, man. I saw pictures of that. I'm gonna upload one of those photos and I'm gonna Photoshop myself in there because
I think that's a great idea. It was really a shame not to have you there. It was fun. We were being silly. Some fans were taking pictures with us, and
that's awesome.
We were having a good old time.
Yeah,
very very fun. We're all juiced up on all that Starbucks that Joyce bought us. All right, should we get on to part two of our Broadway Con panel? All right, here we go. Fly right in, back into the room for part two.
What a world. We're going to take a quick break just to from the questions. We realized we introduced names, but we just wanted to go around and let everybody say like who they played and
what you do,
what they do in the show,
what you did.
What you did in the show.
Start with Elizabeth.
I'm Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. I was one of the Christines. So over the 15 years, I was either the cover for Christine or the alternate Christine or the principal Christine and the triangle girl in Little Band. Let's hear it.
Give it up.
Yeah. That's right. That was me. And the creepy mirror bride. Yes. Who popped out and watched the scene and noticed that I was going to have to go on for Christine because Christine was sick or hit in front of me or something. I'm like, that was me. That was me standing behind the mirror.
You were Christine.
Megan Paterno, Principal Christine. That's it.
Wait, you did one role?
What?
You did one thing?
I only know one
role. You had one job.
Sorry.
Job. That you didn't audition for.
I'll just leave now. It's fine.
Oh, wait, these people only know one role, too. I only know one role, too. My name is Raquel Suarez Groen. It's really hoon, but nobody can say it, so forget that. And I was the principal, Carlotta Giudicelli, also known as the Christine Disliker.
And I'm Carlton Moe, but you can call me Carl. And I played Ubaldo Piangi. And I... Thank you. Some people know me as Adobo Pasquale. I would have liked to have done more, but I was fine doing Piangi. That was hard enough.
My name's Marie Johnson. I started last century in Australia as... Thank you. I started as in the original production in Melbourne as the unofficial alternate understudy to Christine, and then I took over in Sydney and played Christine in Sydney. And then I got a little older, a little wiser, and I'm Madame Giry on Broadway for the past almost 6 years, I think.
I'm Scott Makita. I was a swing at the show for over 20 years, so I swung the 10 ensemble men and then the two opera managers, Andre and Fearman. Yeah. And I stole a scarf from the theater when I left.
And I'm Greg Mills. I was the other male swing along with Scott. I did it in New York for about 11 years. I was in Las Vegas for 6 or 7 months, and I did the Music Box Company for 3 years. I was Raoul on the Music Box. Like Scott, I covered the 10 ensemble men and Phantom, Raoul, and Andre.
I'm Jeremy Stoll. I covered the Phantom. I covered Raoul. I covered Piangi.
Yeah, you did.
See the resemblance?
Magnificent.
And I was also Passerino in the show. So I was Piangi's sidekick. Ah, thank you.
And the best poster dropper ever.
Right.
I was also the IT guy.
Yes, right. Yes,
we were. Yes. So this is a great question, actually. Whoever wrote this and gave us a doodle on it is amazing. I love this question. Parents on the panel, how do you explain your job to your kids?
Scott. Why is everyone looking at me? Actually, my kids, I was in the show so long that I got the permanent contract with the show when my older daughter was about 4 months old. She's now 22. So, yeah, and about to go off to graduate school. So, but I had been a vacation swing for several years before that. So my kids just don't know any different. It's just the job that I do. I think they thought it was kind of cool, but they also thought it was kind of a drag because I was gone a lot, you know, only one day off a week. Luckily, when they were little, it was still Sunday, which was off, which was awesome as a parent to have that day with my kids. So they just kind of grew up with it, so it didn't need any explaining, you know, and if their friends would ask, I would say, just tell your friends Daddy sings and dances for a living. So.
My kids were young teenagers, so yeah, I think overnight I became cool mum. So they sort of grew up with it and, you know, by my side seeing the performances and everything. So now they're like, eh, you know, they're getting on with their own lives.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think the same. Kids Vivian was three. She was four when I joined the tour. So other than, like, missing all of the bedtimes for all of her life until now the show closed and I have all the bedtime times free and she's in college. But, yeah, she always knew. I mean, mommy plays dress-up for a living, you know. Like, and we live in a town in Jersey that's full of Broadway people. Like, it's where Broadway goes to live in the suburbs and have babies, right, and buy houses. So it's not as cool. You know, like, my mom's on Broadway. My mom just won a Tony. My dad's just won an Emmy. My mom, you know, like, it's not, it just is. It just is, so.
No, I was going to say, well, yes. Leo, how do you feel about the fact that your mom was on Broadway? He thought it was pretty cool.
He loves it.
He came to the show almost every day. He slept in my dressing room, so he was lucky.
I did the show longer than my son's been alive, so that's all he's ever known. So now it's more the question of, does he understand why I'm sitting around the house all day now? Now he doesn't know what I'm doing. He's like, what is this? But he's always been involved. My wife works in theater as well, so he's always been used to our schedule. And he actually, when my son was seven, I guess he's got the bug as well, or, you know, did when he was seven. My son was in Kinky Boots on Broadway. He played young Charlie. So he did that for like 15 months until the show closed. So all three of us at one point were working on a show at the same time, which was really cool. So he kind of gets it, and he wants me to get out of the house now.
My kids were both born in the show, so I had to explain to them why I'm not in it anymore. Yeah, they were born right on stage. Can you imagine? Hold, please.
Things have changed, Raul.
Yeah.
We're going to take a slight break.
My daughter loves theater and she wants to dance. My son, he just cannot get away from it fast enough. It's like every time we take him to a Broadway show, that's a nap time for him, basically. It's like, are you kidding me right now? No, I don't like this, Dad. So, but my daughter loves it. But yeah, explaining them to what I do.
They know.
I always put the Passerino costume on. I don't know if you guys have seen. If you haven't seen it, I'm wearing this like kind of frumpy suit and then black tights and then a red straggly beard.
Go on.
And then yeah, right. And then red hair and this cap and I look like a character like no other person on earth, right? I always look in the mirror and go, yeah, I went to college for that. Yeah.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. All right, moving on.
Can we do yours?
Yeah, sure, no, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, this one's always a good question, and these are always the funny answers we get. Someone asked, what is your favorite or most memorable mishaps that you remember from on stage during the show? None? No one? I don't think we ever...
The show went perfectly. What do you have?
Perfectly.
Legitimately
perfectly.
I feel like
there were so many. Like, every night there was, like, something, but not every time. You know, people didn't catch everything. At one point, Ken Cantor, who was in the show for a long time, do you remember? I don't know if you remember this. I was doing my These Things Do Happen, and I was like, Ubaldo, andiamo! And Ken was on my dress, and I did a face plant on the stage. I was like, poof! And I'm pretty sure he did it on purpose. Because he thought it was going to be funny that I was going to trip, but I did a face plant and then had to, like, gracefully get up and leave. So that was one of them. And then the other one, it was Carl was not on. It was Chris Giorgetti. He was on for Piangi. And I came through the door for, where is she or where is he? I can't remember the words now. It's been so long. my dress got stuck in the door. So I did the whole thing trying to yank my dress up. And if Carl was there, he would have saved me. But Giorgetti just stared at me until finally I was able to release myself and on the stage.
No, because that did happen like 2 days later when I came back. And I ripped that dress right out of the wall. So, yeah, I just was like...
Were you guys there for Patricia? You weren't there, obviously, for Patricia's bow when she came on. So she came on stage and Carlotta comes on from this side. And she does this whole, ha, right? Well, she did that too early, and she went, ha, and it got caught.
No, that was me, I think.
And she,
it happened to me twice. It was me.
That was you.
Yes.
Oh, it happened to Patricia, too.
Oh, really?
And
yes,
she
it happened
ended up
to me
having
twice.
To bow with the curtain.
Oh, my
like
God,
this.
Yes. Like, I've taken the whole curtain with me.
Of course. We're standing on stage dying, of course.
I remember the one that sticks out to me is, because, like, the set, it was usually, like, the set would have some kind of issue, right? And so I just remember we're behind the wall before we go out for Managers One, and like Jim Athens, the stage manager there, who's like, he gives the cue to like open the door for us. He's like, on the headset, he's like, okay, the trap doors are still open, so just play the whole scene in one. And so we're like, what? And we go out there, and there's these giant, like, people-sized holes in the stage that we're trying not to fall into while we're doing the scene. And there's parts of it where we have to, like, walk backwards. Like, we can't, you know, we don't have eyes in the back of our heads. And so all of our backward movements were just, like, like, inches instead of feet. Yeah, that was the one that sticks out to me when I think of mishaps.
We could basically do an entire hour on just Ken Cantor.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is 2 hours worth of stories.
You could write a book of Ken Cantor.
There are
so
many things that would happen sometimes in the audience, right? Of people getting into, like, a fight. There was one guy that was, yes, there was one scene where it went
House
on for,
right.
like, one time it went on for, like, three scenes. There was, like, somebody who was completely drunk.
It was, like, from Masquerade to Zitz Probe.
Yes, it went on for so long.
And I remember
the
because
came
the...
came and took them away.
Because in Zitz Probe, I'm, like, messing up the music or whatever in Zitz Probe, and... But the audience started applauding because they escorted this person out. So people were, like, applauding me messing it up, and I was just, like, even more awkward in that scene.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was music of the night, right? And he's singing, and the guys... And they're like, shh, shh, not, but shh, shh. And then the guy's like, you shut up!
Okay, I have a few, but I'll keep it brief. Actually, one of them was when I had my first ever rehearsal on the Majestic stage. And the cool thing is, like, when I went into the company, I already had a bunch of friends that were already on stage that I hadn't seen, actually, in, like, a while, from all different walks of life. Raquel and I have been on the train of knowing each other for a long time, in a great way. But
yes.
So it was, the lights were on, and people were in the audience. So my first thing I ever did, wow, it's just the Tasmanian devil Megan that comes in. There, I think it might have been you, Raquel. I hadn't seen her, and I was on stage. They were doing Think of Me, and you know those stage lights that are right here? And I was like, oh my God, Raquel, it's so good to see you. Crunch, crunch, crunch. And I completely decimated all of the lights right here. And in the meantime, I had my scarf that cost a lot of money, and I had thrown it up then, and it got caught right there, and I went to take it, and I ripped it in half. And that was my first day on the Majestic stage. And I was like, hello, I have arrived. I have actually a world tour story. The monkey on the world tour would pick up radio signal and I will, I mean, I have so, we could write books, but wow, this has been a long time. You know when it was a particularly potent, like, final lair scene, and we were really jiving, and it was like, and the Phantom is like, wait, what do you guys say? You try my patience. Okay. So he's like, you try my patience, and I'm like, and all of a sudden the monkey goes, and I remember he and I looked at each other and we're like, oh sure, like, do we, and we tried not to laugh because it was so potent, and then like took the moment to not laugh, and then all of a sudden it went, so we had to look at it and be like, well, that's happening right now. But okay, one last one. My first show ever on Broadway. No, lie, second show on Broadway ever. So I am very petite, if you haven't noticed. And so, fun fact, because I had come from the world tour, the staging was literally like minutely different. Like maybe one time I'd go right, but now I go left here and there. Anyway, so Ben is on stage with me, and that was the first time I ever actually performed with Ben. I literally was on stage with everyone else except Ben. So it was like, so in the first layer, when I'm supposed to run off, you know, he's like, come, we must return. Well, because I'm very small, for the first time ever in 30 years or whatever, I fell through the hole where the chandelier comes out, and Ben caught me like Indiana Jones style, like to here. And I didn't really think anything of it because I was like, okay, I have to go. And then it was a two-show day, and they were like, we really need to work that. And I was like, why? What happened? And there, so like I saw the hole, which again, like normal humans would not fit into, but here we are. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, is that? And they're like, yeah, you would have actually died. And I was like, okay. So for the first time in 30 years, they closed the hole. So there's that. Lord knows I have so many, but I'll let you guys take it. Yeah. Yeah.
Moving just on. Think of the.
Yeah, you got one?
No, I just. I'm sorry. The monkey picking up the radio signals. I just thought of it like, just all of a sudden, sweet Caroline. Like. That would be so funny.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, but the opera is closing on.
Yeah.
It's like straight out of the play that goes wrong, right?
Yeah,
right. Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they get it, right? Another question, yeah. We have a great question here that came in. I love this one.
Oh yeah, someone said, can you describe the last fan performance? The one that that basically added like 30 minutes at the curtain call.
By round of applause, was anybody at that performance?
Yeah! You guys are amazing.
So that performance was magic for us. We kind of call it the last one because it was the last one for public, and that's what we do. We perform for the public, and at the end of it, for those of you were there, just listen to Sweet Caroline for a second. No, I'll get back to you. So we left the stage. The entire audience, it was massive standing ovation. And then we left the stage, the curtain went down. We all went back to our dressing rooms, and slowly we started coming back to the stage to leave the theater. And not a single person in the audience had left or sat down. They're just clapping. And then the stage guy came on, and they went, yeah! And then somebody from the cast would walk across the stage, and like, okay! And the chandelier would move, and they would clap, and it was crazy. And they started chanting, one more song.
Sweet,
and we're all looking
Caroline.
At each other. Yeah, exactly. This went on and on and on and on, and we basically, by this point, by 15 minutes in, most of the cast had come back to the stage, and we're just standing there, just absolute tears, because it meant so much to us, and to find out that it meant so much to everyone else, and it was just like, please don't go, please don't go. Just everybody in the room was just dying for it to stay. And they couldn't leave, and we couldn't leave. And then eventually we, Nahal came forward and thanked everybody, and then we sang farewell.
You sang Happy Trails?
We sang Happy Trails. Yeah, we don't actually have an encore. Interesting.
Mega mix.
You don't do that in Broadway, but yeah, any memories from that night that I haven't touched upon?
I mean, now that we're like talking about it, it's actually kind of poetic that Nahal was the guy who addressed
it. Yeah, it really is.
You know? Right? Because it was his pudding that we like found out about. So well, and another thing that ended this whole thing.
He just apologized the whole time. I'm so sorry, audience.
No, I was going to say a thing that you guys might not know, but the curtain call is all in silence for Phantom, right? So the entire cast comes out. But one thing that we would do for one another is during the curtain call, if it was someone's birthday or if someone was leaving the show, we would hum Happy Birthday during the curtain call. Or we would hum Happy Trails. So that's where the Happy Trails kind of came from, because we would do that if someone had played their last performance and was leaving the show as sort of a tribute to them.
And there's no better feeling than having everyone hum Happy Birthday to you.
I just had my birthday. And I was like...
Yeah, you have to work on your birthday? Yeah, I do.
It was pretty unbelievable, though. I think just in general, I think seeing all those people... like seeing all of you not wanting to leave, it just put everything like even more into perspective, I think, because I don't know how you guys felt, but it kind of felt like it wasn't real in the moment. Like, I'm like, is this a dream? Like, is this really happening? Because I think none of us ever thought it was going to close. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh my God, this show is so much more than just a show. Like, this is a family for us, but also, you know, we're connected to all of you as well. So it was just like, it felt surreal.
I think that's the moment we all kind of realized that the show doesn't belong to us. It belongs to you. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really special. And I think Kristen Blodgett also got...
She did.
She got the standing ovation of a lifetime. And yeah, it was...
As she should, yes.
Kristen was conduct... That was her last
show. She was our conductor.
That was her last show.
And basically our mother. She was just the most cheerful and wonderful person ever. Yeah.
It was just... I think for me, it became so... obvious that this was a momentous Broadway historical moment, really. And those of you who were there, you know,
I think
will remember.
It's even bigger than that. It was like a huge moment in history, I think. Yeah. It was just, when has that ever happened? I've never heard of that. Yeah. It was awesome. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. It was amazing because I wasn't on that night because, you know, the whole cast was in. But as I do, I roam around backstage with my camera and, you know, was trying to get as many photographs as I could. So I was off in the wings or just off stage. But just to hear, like, I mean, the audience was giving entrance applause to, you know, every principal that came out got, you know, an ovation. Even, like, Raye came out or, like, Lefebvre, you know, I will be in Frankfurt. And there was applause. There's your applause, you know. And it was like every character got acknowledged by the audience that night, and it was unbelievable. And I was actually trying to be sneaky and videotape the Carrington doing the auction before it closed. And you know, and I knew it was going to happen. And he got sold out. You know, boom, sold. And it was applause for a minute. Yeah, you know, and just had to hold. You know, because
I had the same thing with when I came out with the head.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that note is like. Hard to find. I was going to use a swear word, but that would be inappropriate. But it's a hard one to find because it goes da-da-da-dum, meh. And so I always have the note in my head before I start, and I have a pitch pipe to play the note so I know. And I came out there, and the audience was cheering so loud. And at that moment, I'm like, yeah. So I was like, I don't know what note I'm on. And with the cadenza, if you start too low, you end too low, and if you start too high, it's impossible to sing. I think I started on like a high Q. I don't even know what I started on. It was the highest note I've ever sung in my life. I was like, and then, and I had to stop midway because I was like, this is way too high, so I had to like restart it. It was crazy, right?
I think you restarted higher even.
Oh, I started so high. I was like, it was like crazy, and then I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to end on this like high Q. But anyways, I was prepared for the
only
very,
the
very
dogs
last
in the
night.
Neighborhood
oh
hear
my god!
The top of it.
I think everybody was like, "Is she gonna make it?"
And you
Carl
did
was
it.
Like, and I did. Thank God.
I listened to it off stage, like every time, just to like, you know.
But it's wild because it was just like people were cheering for what felt like 2 minutes, you know.
Yeah. So we are coming to the end of our panel here. I think we've got like 2 minutes left. There's one more question, and this is a question that comes a lot from the audiences, but we want to address it. I think it's because, you know, the future of Broadway is you, and people often ask us, what advice do you have? So in 2 minutes, quickly, what advice do you have for future stars of America, future stars of the world, you, in this business?
Okay, I'll be quick. One, keep that fire burning, everyone. And if you have the gut and the dream to do it, you 100% will. Just keep going. Eyes on the prize. Be a lovely colleague. But just believe in yourself. You're the captain of your ships, and no one will be able to fight as hard as you do for your own dream and career. But you'll find people that will help you. But keep that fire burning. That's my 10 seconds.
I would say it's a hard business, and it's a business that will kind of puts a lot of pressure and kind of beats you down a lot, but you do have to believe in yourself and keep going. The key to this business is not talent and not luck and not connections, it's perseverance. And if you can persevere, then you'll quote unquote make it. The other thing is making it means a lot of different things. Yes. Doesn't just mean Broadway. There's incredible theater all over this country, from theaters that are 3,000 seats to theaters that are 45 seats. And you can make it in any of those places. So that's what I have to say about that.
I have to also remember, like, don't take anything personally. You know, as a performer, your voice is your instrument. And so sometimes it can feel when you get feedback, like, this is a personal attack on myself. But it's not. It's always a great, it's to to make you improve and to help you to improve, but also because it is a business, it is a show. So when people give you feedback, be open and just, I remember when I started Phantom, Michelle McConnell, who was the Carlotta before me, said, just see it as an acting exercise. So like every time I'd get a note, I'd be like, this is an acting exercise. So just being open, being a good colleague, being a good person, that goes a long way too, and staying positive. And I just second what Megan said, like, just keep going, keep going.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody. Woo!
All right. Well, that concludes our time up here. Thank you all for showing up this morning. It means the world to us. You mean the world to us. We're being escorted into another room for signing.
Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Thanks, BroadwayCon.
Okay, thank you for joining us. That is the end of part two for Broadway Con. We had a great time doing it. We were very appreciative to everybody who showed up and had those brilliant questions. Please make sure that you go on to our socials and follow and add questions and make comments and send this podcast over to your friends. We have some great stuff coming. Very, very, very fun new ideas Joyce Belitsky, our producer, has come up with. You are going to enjoy them. I can tell you very much. But that is great English. It's right along with my spelling ability. I can't wait to hear Greg Mills's comments and jokes.
And you know, who knows? Maybe we'll do a whole segment of just us giving parent advice.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it's going to be great.
Parental advice from Broadway actors, you know, because we know everything. Anyway, thank you for joining us this week. I hope you have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Find us on our platforms and like and make comments, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back.